You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. Monday the 15th of April. You wouldn't really think looking outside the window. It's the Craven meeting at Newmarket starting tomorrow as we usher in the flat meaningfully. But of course, the bulk of this show will be reflecting on the Randox Grand National and the festival that surrounded it. One that largely left an awful lot of people with smiles on their faces, but threw up plenty of talking points. Cornelius Lycett is with me this morning. Cornelius, you are a Grand National veteran. You won't mind me describing you thus. It is a meeting and a race in which you have taken a personal and professional fascination for a long time, a long, long time. So you've seen lots of different incarnations of this race. What were your primary thoughts as you were heading home?
I think they were positive, weren't they? And I think they were contrasting with some thoughts in the past, which have been very negative. There have been concerns over welfare. There have been concerns, well, mainly over welfare in the course and whether there's any future. Now, I think suddenly we're leaving Aintree in 2024, very positive. We had a three-day festival that worked really well with a good-sized crowd, almost no moaning, some racing that was absolutely outstanding, a Grand National that was extraordinary, really. All in all, I think we're leaving really positively. This is a real good place for jump racing. British jump racing needs a fillip, needs a push forward, because a lot of people left the Cotswolds, left Cheltenham, not feeling quite so positive. But here we are, with a product that works really well, has the potential to work really, really well. So everyone's, I think, got a smile on their face.
Let's put the alternative viewpoint. The Grand National, since the latest raft of changes, has now become boring, sanitized, too clinical, not enough jeopardy, and more people will turn off than turn on.
Well, I just think that's absolute cobblers. That's a technical term, incidentally, in this house. I just think that's nonsense. What do people want? You've got two possibilities with the Grand National. You've either got a modern race for a modern audience in a modern world, or you've got no Grand National at all. And there's no in between. It is sanitized compared to yesteryear. And the obstacles have been changed, and the number of runners was down this year. But did you really think going to the chair, a circuit to go right in front of an enormous crowd and millions more watching on television, with all bar two of the horses still in the race, going to the chair with a circuit to go, was that somehow boring? It just wasn't.
It was different, wasn't it?
But that doesn't make it boring, does it?
The one thing that I've learned over the years with the Grand National, and there have been many, many changes, even in our lifetimes. Sure. That it's very dangerous the year after another set of changes to draw hard and fast rules about what is going to happen in subsequent Grand Nationals. Because in 2013, that was when the fences were changed. Fundamentally, the fences are no different to how they've been for the last 10 years. So that's not an issue. Yes, the field is smaller, but it's still 32. There's still a lot of runners. The moving of the start has clearly made a significant difference, because you can't get ahead of steam up early. And the riders clearly adhered to the briefings and used the whole width of the track, though it was notable that the first four all went somewhere either on the inner or toward the inner. So all those things combined with an awareness of softish ground meant that the race was run in such a way to produce that set of circumstances, which an awful lot of people will have really enjoyed and will have made a lot of people smile, a lot of people who had a bet on the race have a shout two out. I would caution people saying that is what it is now going to look like every year from now on in. We can be confounded by this race all the time.
Well, and you're right to mention 2013. So the changes have been made by Andrew Tallock and Peter Darsbury after the 2012 running. And Aurora's Encore went and won in 2013 at 66-1, I think. So you're right. There was a real glow in 2013. And then that glow, if you recall, continued because there were a number of Grand Nationals after that where the headlines afterwards were about the terrific success of Pinot de Rey or Many Clouds or whoever. Then, of course, it doesn't go on forever. You're absolutely right to point that out. But I think, you know, the officials at Aintree, the officials at the Jockey Club, supported by the British Horse Racing Authority, have shown that they are prepared that they never stop thinking.
And Cornelius, is there a point at which you say, this is where we are happy with this race as an entity, and not, you know, fatality notwithstanding, accident that we don't want notwithstanding, we are satisfied that we've got the balance right here between risk and reward?
Well, it's a good question, isn't it? The formula that Salaika and the team have come up with in 2024 clearly worked well for 2024, a rain-soaked year. So conditions were well on the soft side. I think there's a crucial part of the whole thing that that can happen every year, which is the very responsible attitude taken by the jockeys who were taking part. I'm not saying they were irresponsible in the past, but there was no gung-ho, was there? There was no one you looked at and said, oh, calm down, you know, or whatever. Spread across the course, steady pace through the closing stages, through the early stages. Those early stages last year were part of the problem, weren't they? I'm not squeamish. I found watching between the start and the canal last year, over beaches and the canal, you know, fairly challenging. This year, it was an absolute joy to watch. So the formula, which some of which you can control, some of which you can't control, worked really well this year. But the jockeys behaving impeccably was definitely a big part of the whole thing. And you can control, well, to a large extent, you can control that every year. Other things are less controllable. And it would be ridiculous to say, right, we had a Grand National with no fallers this year, the most finishers since Willie Mullins won it last with Hedge Hunter in 2005. And it's going to be the same next year, because we know perfectly well that that is not going to be the case when we're talking about a horse race.
All right, let's get a quick word then with the managing director at Aintree, Dickon White. Dickon, let's talk from a race point of view, first of all. What is your initial reaction to the way the race was run and the amount of horses that completed the race?
I mean, absolutely delighted. I thought the Randlett's Grand National itself was a fantastic spectacle, thrilling race from start to finish. But, you know, wider than that, I think just across 3 days, we're just absolutely delighted with the quality. You know, the form lines that came in from Cheltenham was fantastic, and great to see sort of a wide array of winners. Obviously, we had the Irish winners with, you know, Willie and Gordon winning races, but also great to see, you know, to this side, you know, and just fantastic. So really, really pleased with how it all went.
Just to address one or two points that we've made, at what point do you, as an executive, look at the race and say, we've got the balance correct here between a race that is challenging and a race that is as safe as we feel it should be?
I mean, as you know, Nick, we would sit down after every year's national meeting and sit down and review all aspects of the meeting. And that obviously includes, as a priority, the racing and fundamentally, most importantly, the Grand National and races over the Grand National fences. So, as you know, Salaika Varma will lead that sort of analysis and review. And we will want to, you know, we will make changes where we see fit. We always do that. You know, it's as we've talked about previously, you know, we are evolving. We've made strategic changes to this year's event, which seem to have been well received and has seemed to have been successful. But, you know, we will not be making any more hasty announcements, hasty decisions. We've done a full review again, and see where we land when we've made those when we've finished that review.
I mean, clearly, it's very unlikely that you're going to be moving the start back to where it was, or that seems to be considered a success. The sort of pseudo standing start seemed to be a success. The removal of some of the runners, I don't think anyone's going to be pushing for a return to 40. It's not going to happen anyway. However, one or two people have wondered about getting reserves back into the race. Now, it wouldn't have actually made any difference this year because they came out very late. But is that something that is a possibility, do you think?
I think, again, it's something that we will look at as part of the review. As you rightly said, people say, oh, why can't we have reserves? As you rightly put there, it wouldn't have made any difference with the reserve systems that we had in place due to the lateness of the two non-runners. Of course. I mean, we just ultimately want to ensure that we have a fantastic spectacle. We want it to be a competitive race. I think we got that on Saturday. When you looked at the field for the Grand National itself, I mean, it was full of quality. That's what ultimately we're about. You know, this is a £1 million race. We want the best horses to be competing in it. And I thought it was fantastic. I mean, you know, last year's Grand National, for various reasons, was an uncomfortable watch for many of us. This year, I think we can look back with a sense of pride to say, look, collectively as an industry, we delivered a very, very successful Grand National. And that's not just from an entry and jockey club perspective. I think the jockeys should take a great deal of credit, the way they rode the race, trainers and stable staff. I just felt that the horses before the race, it just seemed like a calmer environment. And I think everybody had listened, we'd all discussed it internally. But I think we all as an industry should be very proud of what we delivered.
Yeah, I suppose that, again, there's a balance, isn't there? You want a calm environment for the horses, but you want, obviously, to raise the intensity for the spectators and to have that sense of impending drama still very much within the event. I guess that's the kind of magic formula you have to try and create.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, walking down the sides and, you know, literally just before the sort of 5-10 minutes before the race, I felt there was a fantastic, you know, crescendo of noise, a real buzz around the site, in all areas, you know, and just that was fantastic to see. And so I don't think anybody here on the race course felt any different about, you know, this is a very, very special race. This is the race that, you know, almost the world stopped it. The eyes of the world are watching us, sort of thing. And I think we delivered a very successful race. But, you know, we will not stand still on that. We want to keep evolving, keep looking away. We can make it even more exciting. We want to ensure that, you know, 70,000 people continue to come and enjoy it here at Aintree. We want millions of people to watch it and listen to it in this country, but also around the world. And that's what's important to us.
Okay, quick crowd update. How did that get on relative to expectations?
We were delighted with that. I mean, I think, across the 3 days, we were, had very similar numbers to last year across the 3 days. We were slightly up on Thursday and Saturday, slightly behind on Friday, on Ladies Day. I think, you know, we always knew that Friday was going to be the challenging day. It tends to be a younger demographic who comes to the day. We know that they're affected by economical situation, so that was always going to be the challenge. But we found that we sold a huge amount of tickets in the last few days, which is obviously very pleasing from our point of view. And I think everybody who came just had an absolute ball. I mean, you know, the great thing about Aintree is that the racing is absolute top quality, but at the same time, you've got a fantastic sort of party atmosphere. Everybody's quite relaxed, enjoying themselves. And, you know, that was the sort of feedback we've had from the majority of some racegoers who were here, including people from in the industry. And, you know, again, it's something that we're really proud of.
Any sign of a TV number yet?
I've not heard a TV number. I had a couple of WhatsApps with various members of the ITV team yesterday, who said they were delighted with their production, obviously delighted with the Grand National itself. But I've not heard or seen a number yet, but I'm sure that'll be coming for the next sort of 24 hours. And, you know, let's hope that's a positive number, because, you know, as I say, this is the industry's opportunity to put horse racing in the shop window as such. And, you know, I've always felt that a successful Grand National, just like a successful Royal Ascot and a successful Cheltenham Festival, is a fantastic sort of marketing showcase for the sport, which then drives people who historically may not have come racing. So hopefully that will be beneficial in the longer term.
Dickon, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Nick. Much appreciated.
All right, that was Dickon White, Managing Director at Aintree. Just wanted to pick up there, Cornelius. Now, this might drop while we're recording this or afterwards, but it's quite unusual not to have a television audience figure by this stage on Monday. I don't really know what conclusion to draw from that, but it did prompt me to wonder how close the race is still to the national psyche, and how many people who I know who aren't really interested in racing are still phoning me in the week leading up to the Grand National going, well, what's going to happen on Saturday then?
Well, cynics will say that if those numbers were really good, they'd have been releasing the overnight figure that they get over the weekend. It's certainly been well released on occasions when it has been pretty good in the past. But let's wait on the official audience figures from ITV. It will be a heck of a pity if, for everybody's work at Aintree and at the Jockey Club and in the British Horse Racing Authority to improve the race, which they have unquestionably done in 2024, if it turns out that number isn't good. But let's not prejudge that one. In terms of the public consciousness, I was trying to detect from the tone of your voice, were you saying you didn't have quite as many WhatsApps and quite as many calls saying, oh, what wins?
I was quite careful the way I phrased that, because obviously the inference you can draw is, well, you've never tipped the winner of the damn race, so clearly no one's contact you for tips anymore. No, I sort of feel, I feel it in my bones that fewer people knew about it, knew that it was actually happening. And of course, that really is your driver of any sort of mainstream television audience. For an event like the Grand National, which is effectively a one-off event for a huge 90% of the viewership, it's really a question of whether they know it's there and what time it is there and why it matters as a national event. And I looked, for example, in the Sunday Times last week, in the culture supplement of the Sunday Times, where normally the Grand National year after year would be pick of the week. And if it's not pick of the week, it's sports pick of the week. And if it's not sports pick of the week, at least it's a top of the top five things you need to watch in sport this week. It wasn't in any of those. It wasn't even listed as top five sporting events this week. It was just in racing.
In the TV guides.
Yeah, racing, Ed Chamberlain France coverage of ITV's Grand National, whatever. That was it. So I do wonder now they've done so much right with the race, whether we need to be saying, well, is the message getting out there that one of our great sporting institutions is actually taking place to the media?
Good point. My personal experience of people away from racing following the Grand National is there have been plenty of sweepstakes this year. And I know, admittedly, I live in a rural part of the south of England. I know quite a lot of people have lunch parties and things like that to watch the race. And I know I think it's Great British Racing do a sort of sweepstake kit. I'd be interested to know how many people got involved with that. I was involved in a number that came from that particular idea, and they all seem to be working pretty well. So on the one hand, there's plenty of awareness of the race. However, I think it's a constant problem, and it's been an ongoing problem for horse racing amongst the mainstream media, that although there's an appetite out there for people to follow the Grand National, it has been quite striking how little coverage there was in the mainstream. It put ITV to one side, ITV Racing to one side, but elsewhere, how little there's been.
Think it's quite weird that it's on, it's on a mainstream network every, well, it's not on ITV1 every week, but it's on ITV1 very frequently, and it's on a mainstream network all the time. Yet there isn't kind of a cross cut through to other parts of even that network, let alone anywhere else. I do find it strange that.
I think you have to say, that probably needs studying closely, that you and I and others in the racing media spend our lives trying to find the good stories that really resonate with the wider public, how much they did cut through. The amount of people who mentioned to me Christian Williams, Kitty's Light, Christian's daughter, Betsy as well, and her illness, Ain't that a shame? David Maxwell, an amateur rider who's riding in the race. He was interviewed on the Today program on Radio 4 on Friday morning. And even the self-obsessed presenter, Nick Robinson, picked up something he said from the interview. And he's a really engaging character. Late Night Pass with Tom Ellis and Gina Andrews, husband and wife with Tom's mother owning and breeding. Corrack Rambler back with the engaging trainer. Noble Yates back with his story. Those type of stories did cut through. And I think racing needs to be better. And I've been banging this drum for a few years, and I must declare an interest because I started banging the drum when the BBC made me redundant clearly weren't appreciating the stories as much as one would like to do. So although things about the Gambling Act, although things about the levy, although things about the governance of racing are all important, the story, the super duper golden stories about horse racing, about people like the Williams family, about people like the Ellis family, they really cut through, and we should be much, much better at telling those stories, telling the equine stories and the human interest and the equine human stories that exist in horse racing, not just around the Grand National. I was at Hereford races yesterday. There were some nice stories to be found there as well. People will be going to Windsor for the first evening meeting. Oh, well, it's not evening, is it? But the first meeting of the flat season there. I think it is. And there'll be some good stories there. We've got to be better at not just staring at our navels all the time and worrying about, well, important as the Gambling Act and changes to gambling laws are and affordability checks. Obviously, they're all important, but so are the real good equine human stories. And we must be better at telling those.
I mean, Cornelius, the nature of programmes like this is that we talk a lot around the subject and concentrate rather less on the mechanics of the race. 167 from Timeform, Iron Maxis has been awarded. That's the highest rating given to any Grand National winner this century, with Grade 1 winners in second, third and fourth, and a multiple staying handicap winner in fifth. It's not a massive surprise.
It's not, is it? And I think it was quite striking to hear Willie Mullins talking after the race immediately about, you know, somebody said, I think, is this going to be a Cheltenham Gold Cup horse or certainly a Grade 1 race next year? And he didn't prevaricate, he just said yes. So clearly, this is a high-quality horse who's won a high-quality Grand National in great style, really storming through those closing stages to victory. And it does demonstrate how this race has changed from the days when Cheltenham Gold Cup winners and potential Cheltenham Gold Cup winners didn't really take part. So we're now talking about, and as Dickens said earlier on, you've got £1 million race, you want £1 million field, so to speak. And that is what I Am Maximus certainly demonstrates. Quick mention of one or two of those just behind. Won't go through all 31 behind, but Delta Work, wasn't that a grand performance again? Kitty's Light showed up right so well until so late on. Ain't that a shame? David Maxwell, that he deserves a medal for that. Meeting of the Waters has showed so much promise. Limerick Lace had potential negatives on her side, and that proved to be the case. Late Night Pass showed up so fabulously well for the team. Actually, for British racing, there weren't that many runners, but what an epic finish they actually had, with the exception of Corrack Rambler. Noble Yates was still there. Eldorado Allen gave such a run for money. Just demonstrating that it's not that straightforward. Corrack Rambler unseating the rider at the first Marla Mission, and Mr. Incredible, who'd both been well talked up, unseating their riders at the chair. So please don't tell me that was boring. That was fabulous.
What about the Trainers Championship? Is there life left in it, or is Mullins now just going to turn the screw?
Yeah, it could be. It's the Scottish Grand National, isn't it, on Saturday. And unsurprisingly, perhaps, Willie Mullins is McDermott. Is being well talked up for that big money around in the Bet365 Gold Cup a week later. It was a joke. It was supposedly said with a smile on his face by Willie. You know, see you at Ayr and Sandown, but see you at Perth and other places as well. So, you know, this is important. He has that narrow advantage over Dan Skelton, who has a slightly bigger advantage, but still pretty narrow over Paul Nicholls. Paul Nicholls going, trying to equal Martin Pipe in terms of numbers of championships. Dan Skelton having learned so much of what he did from Paul Nicholls. But Mullins in front. And some people are sceptical and say, do we really care about championships of this sort. But yeah, we do, but B, this is history. Willie Mullins is attempting to be champion trainer on both sides of the Irish Sea, like Vincent O'Brien, the iconic Vincent O'Brien 70 years ago. So this is big, and it will really add narrative to the last, what have we got, 12 days of the National Hunt season to continue. It adds extra narrative. And actually, although Harry Cobden is probably going to be champion jockey, they both had a couple of winners yesterday on Sunday racing in Britain. Mathematically, Sean Bone could still do that. So I think we're looking at a tremendous crescendo coming into Sandown Saturday week via who knows where. Certainly Ayr, certainly Perth, certainly other venues as well.
Well, I think it's going to be fun anyway, even if other people don't. Dan Skelton isn't that far behind Willie Mullins, with plenty of shots to fire over the next couple of weeks. How's the mood in the yard this morning, Dan, with a good entry behind you?
Yeah, good entry behind us. And yeah, we're positive. I mean, it was a bit of a dent to our hopes to be champion trainer when Willie won the national. But, you know, it's such a big race, and you know, he was always going to get a good chunk of prize money in it. Just winning it's made it very difficult for us now to try and get a title. But we've got loads of chances at Cheltenham, Ayr, and into next week. Obviously, Sandown's going to play a big part, but we'll make sure we're entered up and ready to go. But you know, it's certainly not over yet, and we're going to give it our best.
And Ayr is somewhere where you've always been really very successful and very, very well represented. Have you got a fresh-ish team for that this year?
Yeah, we have. We've got, I don't think every horse is absolutely fresh from, you know, 3 weeks or more, but we've got the likes of Lotus Surdy, who's favourite for the Scottish Champion Hurdle. There's no question marks about his freshness and wellness. And then we've got Ballygriffin Cottage, who's very fresh and well, and coming in off the back of a very good run last time for the Scottish National. We've got entries in every other race, and I expect we'll take up 15 or more horses, perhaps. And you know, we've probably got one in most races at Cheltenham this week as well. So it's not going to be easy, Nick, but I'm sure plenty of people think, why are we trying? You're trying to beat Willie, who just blow you out of the water, surely. But we can't look at it that way.
And you're second, but you'll know full well that Paul Nicholls, who was favourite at the beginning of the week last week and was still favourite at the end of Thursday, probably wise not to give up on him just yet.
No, exactly, but I can't control either competitor. But you know, Paul's got more to do just because of the numbers, and you know, you're running out of time. If there was a month left in the season, you know, he'd probably still be favourite. But when you run out of time, you've got to take into consideration what the current standings are. But yeah, anyone would write Paul off, you know, at their peril. So I won't be. I certainly aren't doing that. But yeah, I've just got to try and sort of just do the best we can for what we've got for this week. And, you know, I think if we can draw it back to level by the start of play Saturday at Ayr, it's then whoever has the best day at Ayr between me and Willie. And if Paul's pulled equal by then as well, then that's a three-way go, isn't it? But then whoever has a lead coming out of Saturday is not going to be insurmountable. It is going to go to Sandown.
Any of the entry horses likely to run again this season?
Are they going to run? There's a few of them that might go to Sandown, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a few of them that might go to Sandown. But I'm only running the ones that are well enough to run. I shan't be running them regardless. You know, yeah, there might be, you know, you might end up running horses that are used to being in handicaps in an Oaksie chase, for instance sake, but that doesn't mean that I won't be running them that they're well. They'll be in a deeper grade than they're used to. But there's nothing else to run them in afterwards anyway, so you know, that's acceptable. But what I won't be doing is I won't be running horses that aren't ready to go and run and do their best because they're not fresh enough and recovered from their most recent races.
Okay. And as far as the Grand National itself was concerned, what was your view on the race as a spectacle, an entity, a vibe? What did you think of it all?
I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I thought bringing it forward in the day was a great move. I think taking the start further up was fantastic. The biggest difference was obviously the number of runners. Obviously, we always have to review stuff, and there will be a review into what went on at the Grand National. But I think this year it'd be very, very simple and say, well, everyone's done a great job. We'll do the same again next year. And sort of like, hopefully that's another positive step and we can review it again in 5 years' time. But I think the whole thing was very positive. There's a lot of people that go, oh, it's not the race it was, but with respect, it wasn't the race it was since Neptune Collonge raced and won it, because they changed the fences dramatically from that, and for the better. You know, we don't have that. You know, there isn't that that sort of passion for, not danger, that's not the right word, but that passion for what the old Grand National was in modern day society, and you have to respect that. And I think it's all for the better. You know, safety is paramount. When you're actually taking these horses racing, you know, you're so desperate for them to be okay. And, you know, I think that what happened in this year's Grand National will give everybody a great boost and say, well, that was how it should be and what we wanted to see. And, you know, at the end of the day, our detractors have, you know, they haven't got the drum to bang quite so hard now, have they? Which is all the positive step.
Right, Cornelius, quite important news. And Matt Chapman's run with this in The Sun this morning, exclusive in The Sun. Government set to announce dramatic late change on affordability checks, which could save racing from disaster. Now, it's broad brush in its scope, this piece. But Matt says that sources in Westminster tell him an announcement is nigh which will move the goalposts for the expected starting point of intrusive checks on gamblers. But he says the beneficial new figures will be part of a trial or bedding in period. And by the time anything is set in stone, it's likely to be a different leadership which decides their fate. So not getting carried away, but clearly there is going to be a change to the limits. Now, I've done a bit of ringing around myself, and it seems as though the new limits are going to be £5,000 losses a month and £25,000 a year before affordability checks kicks in, which is very different from the £1,000 limit over 90 days, which was originally announced by the gambling minister, but one, I think, or two, Chris Philp. Anyway, it seems as though we're going to get an announcement sometime this week.
Absolutely. Clearly, an announcement is not too far away. I dare say there's going to be a lot of small print. And I think Matt says in his article in The Sun, there will be conditions attached to this type of terms and conditions will apply even more than they would have done otherwise. Clearly, for racing, if these type of numbers are much more palatable, aren't they? And also demonstrate that there's been a lot of hard work by people within racing to say, you know, if people are going to be subject to affordability checks, having lost £1,000 in 3 months, that would be ridiculous. These other numbers seem, you can't attach ridiculous to them. They'll have to be scrutinized by everybody. But that appears to be a positive. We just got to just hold our breath slightly on what else is attached to it, which probably won't be quite so positive.
Just as crucial will be the announcement of the anti-money laundering code, perhaps a couple of weeks after that, which ought to provide some degree of consistency and transparency as regards what checks are happening and why those checks are happening. And you don't have this almost Wild West situation now where you're getting stealth affordability checks all over the shop, and nobody really knows what kind of relationship they can have with their operator.
Yeah, well, the uncertainty has been the thing that's prevailing, hasn't it? No one really, you know, we seem to have been going round in circles and talking about this and hearing different angles for so long now. Matt Chapman does say in his article a bedding in period, so which I suppose would be what you'd expect, a sort of trial period to check everything works okay. But in a general election year in Britain, that means that there's every chance of a change of government with it. Well, there will be a different government or different look to government, whatever, within the next 9-10 months. So it could be a completely different set of people who are considering this whole matter. And if that means further delays and further uncertainty, that will be a downside. But let's hope that if this does happen and there is a trial period, there is a bedding in period, everyone's then happy, then we can, you know, get on with it, if you like.
Well, life for the Grand National winner Ian Maximus could have been very different. It's a real sliding doors moment, this, and it's tinged with a bit of sadness as well, but clearly it's had a very happy conclusion. Ron Huggins is the co-breeder of Ian Maximus. You'll remember Ron from the Brilliant Stare, Double Trigger and Double Eclipse, and many more good horses he's had over the years. It was an inspired purchase of Iron Maximus's dam at Osiris for €7,500. But this wasn't necessarily the natural destination for him, Ron, was it?
No. Well, the funny thing was, originally George and I agreed we'd go to Authorize and to put him on the flat to Mark Johnston.
So you better tell us who George is, first of all.
Yeah, George Tiny is a great friend of mine. We bred horses together for 26 years, and he was a fantastic guy. But unfortunately, he died in December 21. And, you know, the very sad thing was he was ill for a while beforehand, and that resulted in us selling some of the offspring, you know, earlier than we would have ideally liked. Mm.
Amongst whom, of course, was Iron Maximus, who you sold as an Arcana yearling at the mixed sale.
Yeah, absolutely. The funny thing was, I went to the Clairefontaine sale, which was the first one Osiris had in the Deauville area. It was actually at Clairefontaine, and that was the end of January 2014. And it was an absolutely freezing cold day, and very few people were at the sales. So fortunately, I managed to get her, and I was keen on her, you know, because of the sire being a good jumps sire polyglot, but also that Unbridled was in the pedigree, and obviously he was a fantastic horse.
And so you thought really this was going to be a flat yearling. What would you, if you and George had kept hold of Iron Maximus, what would have happened to him?
Well, he would have gone to Mark Johnston.
and so he could have been the next Double Trigger.
Well, that was the idea of trying to breed you know, a stayer. That was definitely the idea. He certainly stays, that's one thing.
And when he was bought from you, did the purchaser think that was it already, did you know that he was going to go down the jumping route, that he was bought as a jump store? No.
Not, I sort of followed it up about a year later and found out he was going down the jumping route, which, you know, I was very happy about.
Because some flat breeders, I mean, and I know you've had nice jumpers as well, but some flat breeders would say, oh no, I don't want a jumper in my pedigree.
No, because, and also now I've got jumping horses as well as flat horses. I've got horses with Anthony Honeyball, and so I love both sides, both the flat and jumping. So it was absolutely brilliant on Saturday to see Iron Maximus, you know, sprinting up the final furlong.
And how big of a thrill was it for you to breed a winner of this race relative to some of your amazing exploits as an owner with horses that have really captured the public's heart?
It's very much on the same level. I mean, I was absolutely thrilled. You know, it was quite incredible, really. In fact, we were driving back from Scotland. We'd been with the family on the Isle of Mull for a week. So first of all, we listened to it on the radio, and then you know, watched it on our phones, and then obviously watched it when we got back home. But it was just thrilling, absolutely fantastic.
Ron, congratulations. Thanks so much for spending a little time with us.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Nick.
Ron Huggins there, breeder of Iron Maximus. And if he loves both codes, so do we. So we transition now to the flat, where we'll be concentrating much of our energy this week at Newmarket on the for the Craven meeting, where I'll be for the next 3 days. And there is nobody who started the season in better form than Richard Hughes. He's well represented at the Craven meeting as well, particularly in the Field and Stakes and the Nell Gwyn. But he's had 8 winners in the last fortnight. He's clipping at well over 30%. And I put it to him a little earlier on today that really this was as good as it's been through his training career.
Yeah, Nick, I think it's the first time I've been, well, Lizzie says I'm a bit negative, but I'm a realist, and I've been going around the place saying this could be our year now. So far, so good, to be honest. But we just have a nice crop of horses out there.
And amongst those nice horses are Whipcracker and Queen of Zafine, both of whom who are down to run at Newmarket on Wednesday. I was really impressed with Whipcracker in that novice at Chelmsford. How good do you think he is?
I don't know, to be honest. He's a nice horse. I'm hoping he's going to be a mile and a quarter horse. And he's working well at home. We're happy with him. And we just got to find out where we are with him.
I mean, it's a deep start. But you'd think by Cracksman out of a See the Moon mare, he should be getting a mile and a quarter and a bit.
Yeah, but he's a pacey horse, Nick. Not all Cracksmans are dour stairs, I don't think. They have a lot of pace, and he showed a lot of pace when he won. So it's a fact-finding mission, to be honest. But he were pleased with his work at home.
And
we're throwing him in the deep end, you know.
And would you have been able to get him on the grass much, or has all the work been done on synthetics with this wet spring?
No, he's got on the grass. We've been lucky that way. Our gallops are very good here in Lambourne. So, yeah, he's done plenty. He's pretty fit. As I say, we're throwing him in the deep end, and we got to find out. There's a lot of expensive entries coming up.
And where you've got an advantage potentially with Queen of Zafine is that fitness, because she's had her runs in 2024. Is she a classic filly, do you think?
I'd have thought maybe she'd have won in Lingfield. If you say yes, she's definitely a classic filly, you know. We have to see, is there improvement on grass? There might be. We're pleased with her work at home. So her trial will tell us where we are with her, you know.
And if I was to ask you now, at the back end of this season, who's going to have been your team captain? Who's going to really have flown the flag for you with most distinction? At the moment, talking now, who do you think it's going to be?
I'd imagine it'd be Bracken's Laugh. He's done nothing wrong so far. We ran him in a group one, and he just didn't quite stay a mile and two on heavy ground at the back end of his two-year-old career. We'd like to think he'd get a mile and a quarter this year. He's out of a Monson mare, but he's by Zoffany, so that's going to hold him back how far he gets. He's a big horse. We don't want to throw him in the deep end again until... I just like to get a bit of foundation into him. We'll go for the D stakes, then we like to run him in Royal Ascot in the mile and a quarter group three.
Perfect. So you're bringing him along nice and steadily, but you think he is a group one performer in the making?
Well, we're hoping. He wasn't beat that far in the group one he ran in, and as I said, he just didn't quite get home in St. Cloud. But if you look where he was in the middle of the track, and Ramadan, I think, was fourth just in front of him. So, yeah, he has the form, and he's shown us all the right signs.
All right, Richard, thanks for your time.
All right, cheers, Nick.
All right, Cornelius is still with me. Cornelius, you've got something for me for today.
A tip in the 4 o'clock at Kelso. The delayed Go North Cab on Target final handicap hurdle race, delayed by the weather, but it takes place at 4 o'clock today. Remembering the great Cab on Target, trained by Mary Reevely, James Reevely's grandma, and a wonderful horse of yesteryear, ridden by Peter Niven. In this race, it's a really good competitive field. And there is a Kelso specialist, number 3, Eloy Depew, a 3 times course and distance winner, that doesn't appear to be particularly severely handicapped in terms of started on 96, is now up to 113, despite winning and running well plenty of times. £3 off for the jockey, trained by Nick Alexander, whose team are in great form. Tip in the 4 o'clock at Kelso, number 3, Eloy Depew.
Cornelius, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. Back for more tomorrow. That was Monday, the 15th of April. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.